We are now beginning. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. I'm excited.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really long book, so we may take many, many months to read this.
Many moons.
Many moons will pass. So chapter one is called The Riddle House. The villagers of Little Hangleton still called it the Riddle House, even though it had been many years since the Riddle family had lived there. It stood on a hill overlooking the village, some of its windows boarded, tiles missing from its roof, and ivy spreading unchecked over its face. Once a fine-looking manor, and easily the largest and grandest building for miles around, the Riddle House was now a damp, derelict, and unoccupied. The Little Hangletons all agreed that the old house was creepy. Half a century ago, something strange and horrible had happened there, something that older inhabitants of the village still liked to discuss when topics for gossip were scarce. The story had been picked over so many times and had been embroidered in so many places that nobody was quite sure what the truth was anymore. Every version of the tale, however, started in the same place. 50 years ago, at daybreak, on a fine summer's morning, when the Riddle House had still been well-kept and impressive, a maid had entered the drawing room to find all three Riddles dead. The maid had run screaming down the hill into the village and roused as many people as she could, lying there with her eyes wide open, cold as ice, still in their dinner things. The police were summoned, and the whole of Little Hangleton had seethed with shocked curiosity and ill-disguised excitement. Nobody wasted their breath pretending to feel very sad about the Riddles, for they'd been most unpopular. Elderly Mr. and Mrs. Riddle had been rich, snobbish, and rude, and their grown-up son, Tom, had been, if anything, worse. All the villagers cared about was the identity of the murderer, for plainly, three apparently healthy people did not all drop dead of natural causes on the same night.
Tom? I don't remember this. Okay.
The Hanged Man, the village pub, did a roaring trade that night. The whole village seemed to have turned out to discuss the murders. They were rewarded for leaving their firesides when the Riddle's cook arrived dramatically in the midst and announced to the suddenly silent pub that a man called Frank Bryce had just been arrested. Frank! Cried several people. Never! Frank Bryce was the Riddle's gardener. He lived alone in a run-down cottage on the grounds of the Riddle House. Frank had come back from the war with a very stiff leg and a great dislike of crowds and noises, and he had been working for the Riddles ever since. There was a rush to buy the cook drinks and hear more details. Always thought he was so odd, she told the eagerly listening villagers after her fourth sherry. Unfriendly, like. I'm sure if I offered him a cuppa once, I've offered it 100 times. Never wanted to mix, he didn't. Ah, now, said a woman at the bar. He had a hard war, Frank. He liked the quiet life. That's no reason to. Who else had a key to the back door, then? Barked the cook. There's been a spare key hanging in the gardener's cottage far back as I can remember. Nobody forced the door last night. No broken windows. All Frank had to do was creep up to the big house while we were sleeping. The villagers exchanged dirty looks. I always thought he had a nasty look about him right enough, grunted the man at the bar. War turned him funny, if you ask me, said the landlord. Told you I wouldn't like to get on the wrong side of Frank, didn't I, Dot? Said an excited woman in the corner. Horrible temper, said Dot, nodding fervently. I remember when he was a kid. By the following morning, hardly anybody in Little Hangleton doubted that Frank Bryce had killed the Riddles. But over in the neighboring town of Great Hangleton, in the dark and dingy police station, Frank was stubbornly repeating again and again that he was innocent, and that the only person he had seen near the house on the day of the Riddle's death had been a teenage boy, a stranger, dark-haired and pale. Nobody else in the village had seen any such boy, and the police were quite sure that Frank had just invented him. Then, just when things were looking very serious for Frank, the report on the Riddle's bodies came back and changed everything. The police had never read an odder report. A team of doctors had examined the body and concluded that none of the Riddles had been poisoned, stabbed, shot, strangled, suffocated, or, as far as they could tell, harmed in any way. In fact, the report continued in the tone of unmistakable bewilderment, the Riddles all appeared to be in perfect health, apart from the fact that they were dead. The doctors did note, as though determined to find something wrong with the bottles, that each of the riddles had a look of terror upon his or her face. But as the frightened police said, whoever heard of three people being frightened to death? As there was no proof that the riddles had been murdered at all, the police were forced to let Frank go. The riddles were buried in the little Hingleton churchyard, and their graves remained objects of curiosity for a while. To everyone's surprise, and amid a cloud of suspicion, Frank Bryce returned to his cottage on the grounds of the Riddle House. As far as I'm concerned, he killed them. I don't care what the police say, said Dot and the Hanged Man. And if he had any decency, he'd leave here, knowing as how we knows he did it. But Frank didn't leave. He stayed to tend the gardens for the next family who lived in the Riddle House, and then the next, for neither family stayed long. Perhaps it was partly because of Frank that the new owner said that there was a nasty feeling about the place, which, in the absence of inhabitants, started to fall into disrepair. The wealthy man who owned the Riddle House these days neither lived there nor put it to any use. They said in the village that he kept it for tax reasons, though nobody was very clear what these might be. The wealthy owner continued to pay Frank to do the gardening. Frank was nearing his 77th birthday now, very deaf, his bad legs stiffer than ever, but he could be seen puttering around the flower beds in fine weather, even though the weeds were starting to creep up on him, try as he might to suppress them. Weeds were not the only thing Frank had to contend with either. Boys from the village made a habit of throwing stones through the windows of the Riddle House. They rode their bicycles over the lawn Frank had worked so hard to keep smooth. Once or twice they broke into the old house for a dare. They knew that old Frank's devotion to the house and grounds amounted to an almost obsession, and it amused them to see him limping across the garden, brandishing his stick and yelling croakily at them.
That's mean.
Frank, for his part, believed the boys tormented him because they, like their parents and grandparents, thought him a murderer. So when Frank awoke one night in August and saw something very odd at the old house, he assumed that the boys had gone one step further in their attempts to punish him. It was Frank's bad leg that woke him. It was paining him worse than ever in his old age. He got up and limped downstairs into the kitchen with the idea of refilling the hot water bottle to ease the stiffness in his knee. Standing in the sink, filling the kettle, he looked up at the Riddle House and saw lights glimmering in its upper windows. Frank knew at once what was going on. The boys had broken into the house again, and judging by the flickering quality of the light, they'd started a fire. Frank had no telephone, in any case, and he had deeply mistrusted the police ever since they'd taken him in for questioning about the Riddles' deaths. He put the kettle down at once, hurried back upstairs as fast as his bad leg would allow, and was soon back in the kitchen, fully dressed and removing a rusty old key from its hook by the door. He picked up his walking stick, which was propped against the wall, and set off into the night. The front door of the Riddle House bore no sign of being forced, nor did any of the windows. Frank limped around to the back of the house until he reached a door almost completely hidden by ivy, took out the old key, put it in the lock, and opened the door noiselessly. He let himself into a cavernous kitchen. Frank had not entered it for many years. Nevertheless, although it was very dark, he remembered where the door in the hall was, and he groped his hands toward it, his nostrils full of the smell of decay, ears pricked for any sound of footsteps or voices from overhead. He reached the hall, which was a little lighter, owing to a large mullioned windows on either side of the front door, and he started to climb the stairs, blessing the dust that lay thick upon the stone because it muffled the sound of his feet. On the landing, Frank turned right and saw at once where the intruders were. At the end of the passage, a door stood ajar, and a flickering light shone through the gap, casting a long silver of gold across the black floor. Slipping.
Fix this on your eyelashes.
Which eyelashes?
Yeah. On your eyelashes. Yeah, they're so long. They had something in them.
Oh. Sorry.
No. I just didn't want it to get in your eye.
Frank edged closer and closer, grasping his walking stick firmly. Several feet from the entrance, he was able to see a narrow slice of the room beyond. The fire, he saw now, had been lit in the grate. This surprised him. Then he stopped moving and listened intensely. for a man spoke within the room. It sounded timid and fearful. "Is a little more in my bottle, my lord." Wait, how did I do him last?
I don't remember.
What should I do with him?
Yeah, this is Pettigrew.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. "Just a little more in the bottle, my lord, if you're still hungry." That'll be with him. "Later," said a second voice.
"Later."
What says here? Listen. "This too, we'll decide what I'm going to do, but this too belonged to a man, but it was strangely high-pitched and cold as a sudden blast of icy wind."
Later.
No, that's creepy.
It is supposed to be creepy.
No, that's weird creepy. Something about the voice. Something about that voice later. Made the sparse hairs on the back of Frank's neck stand up.
Later.
No. I'm going to do this. "Move closer to the fire, Wormtail." Does that seem okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Frank turned his right ear toward the door. The better to hear you with, my dear. There came a clink of a bottle being put down on some very hard surface, and the dull scraping noise of a heavy chair being dragged across the floor. Frank caught a glimpse of a small man, his back to the door, pushing the chair into place. He was wearing a long black cloak, and there was a bald patch on the top of his head. Then he went out of sight again. "Where is Nagini?" said the cold voice. "I don't know, my lord," said the first voice nervously. "She set out to explore the house, I think." "You will milk her before we retire, Wormtail," said the second voice. "I will need feeding in the night. The journey has tired me greatly." Brow furrowed, Frank inclined his good ear still closer to the door, listening very hard. There was a pause, and then the man called Wormtail spoke again.
"My lord, may I ask how long we're going to stay here?"
"A week," said the cold voice. "Perhaps longer. This place is moderately comfortable, and the plan cannot proceed yet. It would be foolish to act before the Quidditch World Cup is over." Frank inserted a gnarled finger into his ear and rotated it. Owing, no doubt, to a buildup of earwax, he had heard the word Quidditch, which was not a word at all.
The Quidditch World Cup, my lord," said Wormtail.
Frank dug his finger still more vigorously into his ear.
"Forgive me, but I do not understand. Why should we wait until the World Cup is over?"
"Because, fool, at this very moment, wizards are pouring around the country from all over the world, and every meddler from the Ministry of Magic will be on duty, on the watch for signs of unusual activity, checking and double-checking intensities." What are you doing? I think I have a guy, or an ex-guy.
It's either a bald patch or...
"They will be obsessed with security, lest the muggles notice anything. So wait." Frank stopped trying to clear out his ear. He had distinctly heard the words Ministry of Magic, Wizards, and Muggles. Plainly, each of the expressions meant something secret. And Frank could think of only two sorts of people who'd speak in code. Spies and criminals. Frank tightened his hold on the walking stick once more and listened closely still.
"Your lordship is still determined, then?"
Wormtail said quietly.
"Certainly I'm determined, Wormtail."
There was a note of menace in the cold voice now. Are you reading along?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. A slight pause followed, and then Wormtail spoke, the words tumbling from him in a rush as though he was forcing himself to say this before he lost his nerves.
"It could be done without Harry Potter, my lord."
Another pause, more protracted, and then...
"Without Harry Potter,"
breathed the second voice softly.
"I see." "My lord, I do not say this out of concern for the boy," said Wormtail, his voice rising squeakily. "The boy is nothing to me, nothing at all. It is merely that if we were to use another witch or wizard, any wizard, the thing could be done so much more quickly. If you allowed me to leave for a short while,
you know that I can disguise myself most effectively. I could be back here in as little as 2 days with a suitable person."
"I could use another wizard," said a cold voice softly. "That is true." "My lord, it makes sense," said Wormtail, sounding thoroughly relieved now. "Laying hands on Harry Potter would be so difficult, he's so well protected." "And so you volunteer to go and fetch me a substitute? I wonder, perhaps the task of nursing me has become wearisome for you, Wormtail. Could this suggestion of abandoning the plan be nothing more than an attempt to desert me?
My lord, I have no wish to leave you, none at all.
Do not lie to me, said the second voice. I can always tell, Wormtail, you're regretting that you ever returned to me. I revolt you. I see you flinch when you look at me, feel you shudder when you touch me.
No, no, my devotion to your lordship.
Your devotion is nothing more than cowardice. You would not be here if you had anywhere else to go. How am I to survive without you when I need feeding every few hours? Who is to milk Nagini? What does that mean?
It means that they put their... It's a real thing, actually, when they take a snake and they have the put their venom in the bottle. And the way that it works is you take, like, a little vial, like, about this big, and it's covered in, like, a kind of paper with a rubber band on it, and they get the snake to bite it, and then it releases the venom.
But
and he has to drink
it. So he drinks the venom. I see. Why do they call that milking?
It comes out of two pointy objects.
Ah. Oops.
But you seem so much stronger, my lord.
Liar, breathed the second voice. I am no stronger, and a few days alone would be enough to rob me of the little health I've regained under your clumsy care. Silence. Wormtail, who had been sputtering incoherently, fell silent at once. For a few more seconds, Frank could hear nothing but the fire crackling. Then the second man spoke once more, in a whisper that was almost a hiss. I have my reasons for using the boy, as I've already explained to you. And I will use no other. I've waited 13 years. A few more months will make no difference. As for their protection surrounding the boy, I believe my plan will be effective. All that is needed is a little courage from you, Wormtail. Courage you will find, unless you wish to feel the full extent of Lord Voldemort's wrath.
My voice is getting hoarse.
My lord, I must speak, said Wormtail, panic in his voice now. All through our journey, I have gone over the plan in my head, my lord. Bertha Jorkin's disappearance will not go unnoticed for long, and if we proceed, if I murder... If, whispered the second voice, if you follow the plan, Wormtail. The Ministry need never know that anyone else has died. You can do it quickly without fuss. I only wish...
I did read this one.
Yeah.
Ugh, damn it.
What are you doing, Boo? Why don't we finish up then?
Yeah.
Okay, careful, you've got orange all over your hands. It's no, it's incredibly gross and sticky.
It's not sticky.
It is. Come on, Boo. Seriously, please. Thanks. Okay. I only wish that I could do it myself, but in my present condition. I love you, Boo.
I love you.
Come, Wormtail. One more death in our path to Harry Potter is clear. I'm not asking you to do it alone. By that time, my faithful servant will have returned. I am a faithful servant, said Wormtail, the merest trace of sullenness in his voice. Wormtail, I need somebody with brains, somebody whose loyalty has never wavered. And you, unfortunately, fill neither requirement. I found you, said Wormtail, and there was definitely a sulky edge to his voice. I was the one who found you. I brought you Bertha Jorkins.
That is true, said the second man, sounding amused.
A stroke of brilliance I would have not thought possible from you. Wormtail, though truth be told, you were not aware how useful she would be when you caught her.
You're cute. Are you biting? Oh, okay.
I thought she might be useful, my lord.
Liar,
said the second voice, a cruel amusement, more pronounced than ever. However, I do not deny that her information was valuable. Without it, I would never have formed our plan. For that, you have your reward, Wormtail. I allow you to perform an essential task for me, one that many of my followers would give their right hands to perform.
I think that that's foreshadowing.
What?
Many would give their right hands.
Yeah.
Then doesn't he cut off Wormtail's hand?
He does, doesn't he? Good call.
Mm-hmm.
Really, my lord? What? Said Wormtail, sounding terrified again. Ah, Wormtail, you don't want me to spoil the surprise. Your part will come at the very end, but I promise you, you will have the honor of being just as useful as Bertha Jenkins.
Jorkins.
You, Wormtail's voice suddenly sounded hoarse as though his mouth had gone dry. You were going to kill me, too? Wormtail, said the cold voice silkily. Why would I kill you? I killed Bertha because I had to. She was fit for nothing after my questioning, quite useless. In any case, awkward questions would have been asked if she had gone back to the ministry with news that she had met you on her holidays. Wizards who are supposed to be dead would not do well to run into any ministry of magic wizards at Wayside Inn. Wormtail muttered something so quietly that Frank could not hear it, but it made the second man laugh, an entirely mirthless laugh, cold as his speech. We could have modified our memory, but memory charms can be broken by a powerful wizard, as I proved when I questioned her. It would be an insult to her memory not to use the information I extracted from her, Wormtail. I think maybe we could stop there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And tomorrow we'll see how this deadly encounter ends. Okay. I love you so much, Boo.
You're probably listening to this later and being very cuddly and loving me very much. I love you so much. Because you're so, so cute. You're the sweetest girl ever. I love you. Good night, Boo.